This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On a Wednesday, it is Payne and Pendergast. Good to be with you. And on Wednesdays, we are joined by John McClain. Normally in the 8 o'clock hour for this week and next week, it'll be in the 7 o'clock hour. He joins us right now. The General, the Hall of Famer, John McClain, joining us on the show. John, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great. What a great day yesterday was for pro sports in Houston. And you think back to all that time we had to kill during the offseason, wondering if there were going to be sports. And then when the Astros win with a great pitching, and then, of course, the Rockets blow out Oklahoma City without Russell Westbrook, and things are going well for the Texans. It's a great time to be a fan here.
Yeah, we'll dig into all that, John, over the next hour with you. But I want to start actually with over the weekend, and I think it was after one of the practices, either Friday or Saturday. You tweeted, I won't say out of nowhere because it's been a topic throughout the offseason, but you did tweet that the Texans are working to get Deshaun Watson and Zach Cunningham contract extensions done before the season. Was that just a gentle reminder for everybody, or is there some increased heat on those news stories? Can you take us through what led to you tweeting that?
They redid Angelo Blackson's contract. That means that three players they had targeted for redos were right guard Zach Fulton, Angelo Blackson, and Sunil Calamete, and that freed up about $8 million under the cap. And usually, it's not really a deadline, but they know, and Watson's agent, David Mugleta, knows they want to get that extension done by the start of regular season on September 10th. And I don't think they want that, Watson having to worry about that during regular season. So now that they got those extensions done, and I think it's just that they're starting to heat up. And I'll say the same thing I've been saying. I think they'll get it done by the start of regular season. Don't know if that'll be today or September 9th, but I know they have every intention. And Watson, of course, is first because you got to see what the structure of his contract will be, if it'll and what they'll have left over. But I think both sides are doing everything they can to get that deal done.
So with Blackson and Calamete, those were definitely pay cuts, you know, pay reductions. Fulton's was a little bit more of a redistribution, correct?
Well, yeah, he's got a chance to make the money back.
Oh, but okay.
Yeah, all of them have some bonuses in there, but they're still pay cuts.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they got any more of those coming or not, but I just know now they're focused there. Other, of course, training camp and all that entails, you know, they want to try to get Watson done. Doesn't mean they'll get it done. I always use this, as Bud Adams used to tell us when he was talking about contract negotiations with the Oilers, he'd say, it takes two to tangle. That's not what
yeah,
it meant,
tangle.
But, you know,
yeah.
When you think about it, it's true.
Well, you know, the thing about the pay cuts is interesting because I don't know if more are to come, that this regime with Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, they've seemed like they've been pretty generous with some of these contracts and some of these free agents. This is the other side of it where they're flat out going to guys that might be in danger of getting cut and saying, look, you're not worth this much money. Why don't you maybe work with us and take a little bit less money? And I don't know if I remember this many guys getting done this early where you ask to take pay cuts like that. Usually it's one or two guys, maybe down closer to the closer to the deadline. I guess what I worry about that with that, John, is that those can create a little bit of a rift in the culture, which is something the opposite of what seemingly Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby have wanted to do. If you start, you know, wholesale asking for pay cuts out of the veteran players.
Well, I think on those three, if you see Calamete was on IR last year after starting the season before. Fulton is the starting right guard going into his third season. It started 15 games last year, second most to Nick Martin among the offensive linemen. And then Blackson, and let's be honest, he's holding that position for Ross Blacklock, whether it's this year, the starting job, or next year. So I think in the time of the coronavirus, a lot of players didn't want to all of a sudden become free agents. And they have paid a lot of money for Laremy Tunsil, Whitney Mercilus. You know, the idea is you come out, you do everything you're supposed to, you play really well, you become one of the best players on the team, your contract's up, you're going to get paid, and that sends a good message.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. So, John, you and I have been two of the folks out there that get coronavirus tested every single day before practice, and that's obviously been, among many things, something that's felt very, very different about this training camp. With respect to the actual football part, the biggest difference for me, this is four straight days as of yesterday that they've been in pads and actually doing some degree of hitting in practice. How urgent are these practices for the Texans, considering there are no preseason games? And is that the big reason why we've seen so much padded work? All four practices so far have been in pads and involved contact.
Absolutely. And they've had two indoors, two outdoors. Bill O'Brien told us they're going to have a couple of scrimmages. I got to ask him tomorrow, because the players are off today, when he's got a scrimmage scheduled. And it'll be in Energy Stadium, of course, and that substitutes for no joint practices and no preseason games. But, you know, they're limited in the number of times they can put on practices, but they're going to do the maximum because the players know. You know, you see guys that are in and out of practice. Everybody, as O'Brien told us the first day, has their own ramp-up schedule. It's not like you tell all the defensive linemen, okay, you're all coming in, you're all going to do the exact same thing. They checked them over and over and over once they got here to see what kind of shape they were in. That was that early acclimation period. You know, they've been in camp since the last week of July. You know, this is going on, this will be 4 weeks. And so once they knew what they were capable of physically, they put them all on their own schedule. I think that's smart. And the idea, of course, is to try to have them all on the same page physically as that week as they prepare to go to Kansas City.
John, the week one opponent, the Kansas City Chiefs, have announced they're going to allow 22% capacity. Was that a surprise to you? And are you getting a feel for how many teams are going to allow fans in this year?
No, everybody had a plan for a minimal amount, including the Texans. And, of course, the Texans said there won't be any fans for the game against Baltimore, and then their next home game is against Minnesota in October, and they said they'll wait to see that. I'll still be surprised if people put fans in the stands, because you think about 17,000 people at Arrowhead Stadium, which seats 75, and I think once fans, if they are, go to games and they see all the restrictions they have, and the thing that I don't understand, say the Texans, and I can't remember if we talked about this, but say the Texans let in 15,000 fans, and they were spread all over the stadium, and they had to wear their mask, and there was no tailgating in a parking lot. Well, what do they do if people did tailgate? What would they do if two cars parked next to each other, and they pull their barbecue pit out, and they started cooking? Is there going to be a tailgating security in a parking lot? What if when they get in the stadium, they're in the bathroom and they're supposed to be 6 feet apart, and they're not? You know, what if you're about to get in the urinal and the guy behind you takes his mask off?
Walmart can handle it. I feel like the Texans could handle it.
Yeah, see, I think is, well, of course you can handle it, but what do? And then you tell a guy by you in the urinal, hey, man, pull your mask up. Next thing you know, you're getting in a fight with a drunk
man.
Yeah,
look.
They're not going to
have security in the bathroom. No, Sean, okay, you're allowing YouTube videos and TikTok. Like, the worst-case scenario isn't what plays out at the grocery stores and at Walmart. Like, it's already – I don't understand why it's happening at all these other different businesses. I don't understand what makes it different in the NFL.
Well, first of all, I don't think you got a bunch of drunk people in Walmart. At least they don't look like
that. You know, you're not a man of the people anymore. Yeah. John,
no,
drunkenness is the least of your worries.
And I think that there would be all kind of violations, and how are you going – what are you going to do about it? Are you going to have people that patrol in the upper reaches of the end zone if a family decides to take their mask off? I just think you're asking for a lot of trouble. I also think it's unfair. Remember early on, Roger – Goodell said it would be a level playing field for everybody. Now he's leaving it up to the teams in their states.
Yeah.
And like Texas, of course, we're one of the most high-risk states in the country. And Jerry Jones says they have good ventilation, so he'll put a small number in there. I can't wait to see when you get to Kansas City if they actually go through with the plan, if you can hear 17,000 fans in that vast market when some of them are in the upper decks in the end zone and the corners, and some are on the 50.
We're going to hear from Cliff Kingsbury in the next segment. DeAndre Hopkins, when he was announcing, hey, it's not a holdout, he was retweeting John McClain. I want to get John's thoughts on where Hopkins is at with the Cardinals and his possible contract negotiation right now. What might the Texans be thinking as they're watching that saga play out in the desert? We'll do headlines a little later on this hour as well. John McClain in an hour early with us here on a Wednesday on Sports Radio 610. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain in with us for the 7 o'clock hour today. Here's Cliff Kingsbury on DeAndre Hopkins' hamstring injury.
It's a soft tissue injury. I'm not sure. I mean, DeAndre's a guy who works really hard at his craft and stays in great shape. So I'm not sure if that's what it's, you know, a reason for. But he, you know, he's working, getting better each day, and I expect him back soon.
Does him missing practice time, is that a setback as far as him learning the offense, or are you trying to figure out how to use him?
It's not. He's been so productive in this league. He's a pro's pro. When it comes to, you know, knowing what it takes for him to have his body ready and his mind ready to perform at a high level week one. And you'd obviously like Kyler to get a few more reps with him, but they got some great work in the summer. And, you know, he's a guy who's going to present himself well on the field for a young quarterback. We don't worry too much about it, knowing what he's done in this league, what he's about, having been around him a little bit, and how he prepares to get himself ready.
All right, so that's second-year head coach Cliff Kingsbury. John, DeAndre Hopkins eschewed the notion that he's holding out by retweeting a tweet that you put up with a link to an article suggesting that that might be why he's sitting out right now. I don't know. I guess early on here, the Hopkins experience in Arizona, As you look at this little bit of news, what are your feelings about how this stuff is, you know, relative to the Texans? They're probably not paying a whole lot of attention to Hopkins out there, but would this be something that they would be dealing with right now if they had not moved him, this whole Hopkins hamstring, not practicing contract stuff? Is this exactly why O'Brien moved him?
Well, he moved him because he had 3 years left on his contract, and he wanted to go from 12 to 22 million like Julio Jones got last year, and he is vastly underpaid, and they didn't want to redo it for 3 years. And so I'll tweet everything about Hopkins that I see, because I think there's a lot of interest in him, and there will be for the rest of his career in Houston. And so I think I tweeted four stories. One of them, I don't even know who it was. It was an outlet over there that brought up the fact, could this be involving his contract, because now you can't hold out. It's $50,000 fine a day, and you have to pay it back. And you can't let it go by saying, okay, just come in, we'll forget about the fine money. And so what you have is players come in, and then they'll get hurt. Now, he may have a hamstring injury. You know, I'm not going to question what a guy feels, because I don't know. Melvin Ingram is going through that in with the Chargers, because after Joey Bosa got paid, he wants to get paid too. So I tweeted the stories, and then people told me that that Hopkins responded and said, no, it's not involving his contract. I know he fired his agent, and there's talk that he's using the same three financial advisors that Laramie Tunsil used because Tunsil came out of it so well. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. You know, the thing about the Cardinals will find out what the Texans already knew. He will always answer the bell.
You know, a couple of years ago, we wondered kind of whether Jadeveon Clowney was doing a soft holdout or a hold-in or whatever it might be where, oh, look, I'm not holding out, but I'm really injured and I'm not going to practice until I feel like practicing. Where are we with Clowney right now, and when do you think he signs? It seems like the most prevalent rumor is that he's going to go to the Titans still, but I have no idea.
Mike Vrabel gets asked almost every time he's on Zoom. You can tell Mike's frustration with it because he's tired of answering the question because he has no new answers. He and John Robinson, the Titans general manager, have said yes, they're interested in Clowney. And I guess, you know, Vic Beasley, they signed him from Atlanta, and then he didn't show up mysteriously. And I think they said he got $500,000 in fines, you know, and he's got to pay it. And then he showed up, and I know now they don't know if they can count on him. They don't know if Vic Beasley can be trusted. But whatever offer they have for Jadeveon Clowney has not been enough for him and his agent, Buzz Cook. Clowney's been working out like crazy here out at Plex with Danny Arnold throughout the offseason, and now that you can give people physicals that you couldn't give them during the offseason, Clowney should be available for anybody that wants to check him out.
John, you've been out of practice. When people ask you about the Texans and what you've seen through the first few practices, what are the first one or two things that jump into your head that you tell them?
I'm sure the same as you. They want to know about Watson and the receivers because Watson is their best player. The one thing I do not get asked about, and I'm guessing it's the same way with you guys, in the past it was always about what are they going to do about their offensive line? Man, their offensive line's terrible. What are they going to do about protecting Watson? They're going to get Watson killed. He's going to want to leave because they can't protect him. I don't have anybody asking me about the offensive line now for the first time since early in Bill O'Brien's career. It seems like the thing that people ask me about, and that's whether it's my mailbag that I run Friday or just friends, will ask me about the defense. They're all worried about the defense, and they should be based on what we saw the defense last season.
What's the biggest point of concern on the defense right now? Same as it has been the cornerbacks?
They're all worried about the defensive backs. People are saying, well, who's this new safety playing with Justin Reed? What kind of depth do they have there? But it all starts up front. You know, everybody asks about Watt's health. Watt was there the first day, and Bill O'Brien said he's going to take it easy on him. You know, J.J., they always take it easy on him in training camp. And so they're worried about his health and then the development of young players. They'll ask me about Ross Blacklock because he's a local kid who went to TCU and a lot of people know about him, and he's their top pick. Don't hear much about the linebackers. You know, they've got – in fact, you guys just gave me a great column idea tomorrow.
You're welcome.
What starting job is up for grabs right now?
Well, I didn't realize that Gerrion Conley was still working through injury issues, which is what Bill O'Brien said yesterday. I think he said that after practice in your pool report, John. How concerned do we need to be about Gerrion Conley's injury issues? He used the multiple injuries, I believe.
Well, he's out there. He was out there. I can't remember if he redid his contract. I don't remember if he had surgery or not. I can't keep up. But they've got Lonnie Johnson, Gerrion Conley, and Bradley Roby as their top three corners. O'Brien's always talking up Keon Crossan. I don't know if it's because Crossan is a very vocal, enthusiastic player who's all over the place. He and A.J. Moore, the safety who makes a play every practice, and O'Brien keeps describing him as awesome. You know, it'd really be good for them if A.J. Moore could contribute as a backup safety behind the first two. And we don't know what's going to happen with Eric Murray. I wrote about him today. You know, he's kind of an unknown. They signed him to starter's money, and he's never been very good with Kansas City or Cleveland, so they see things in him others don't. And then Conley, I don't think they're worried about it. They haven't acted like they're worried about it, but anytime somebody's hurt at this time and you're getting closer to regular season, to me, you should be worried about it.
Yeah, John, to your point, I think it's a good point because I was trying to come up with, okay, what are the four practices in, what are the position battles that have sort of, what are the battle lines that have been drawn at certain positions? They're all backup positions. Now, it doesn't mean that, the Texans are good to go. They're going to have a great team this year, but it does seem like the first layer of their depth chart is fairly solidified. I can't think of one real true position battle as far as starters go. Like even Brennan Scarlett, who is, you know, he's not a great outside linebacker, but he's going to start at outside linebacker. Eric Murray, we have no idea what he is at safety. He's probably going to start at safety. It seems like all the position battles and roster battles are going on the layer below that, right?
Well, I'm even thinking about backups. They got veteran players on their special teams. I could pick the safeties right now, and the corners, that seems to be set except for the bottom of the depending on how many they want to take. In a normal offseason, maybe John Grenard, the third-round pick, would push Brennan Scarlett. Probably not because he's a young guy. But I've never seen the Texans. I couldn't tell you right now one position, unless somebody played great in preseason and joint practices and actually beat out somebody. But it's hard to beat out somebody when you're not going against somebody. Maybe Kiki QT will return punts over DeAndre Carter. You know, maybe they'll have a new kickoff returner besides DeAndre Carter. Maybe that's what's up. All the special teams positions are set. I just never seen this team have this kind of veteran experience, and they're pushing them, but I just don't see it. In fact, that's what I'm going to write about for tomorrow.
Yeah. I would write about, John, how it is nice to not have to discuss the battle for left tackle, to start at left tackle for this team. Oh, my God.
Julion Davenport's back at left tackle.
Yeah, yeah. Khalil versus Davenport. Oh, my God. Clash of the Titans.
And, Chantrell Henderson is the right tackle.
Oh, you know, my God.
This time last year, those two guys were the starters because they were just trying to figure out, would Max Sharping play right tackle or guard? Would Titus Howard be good enough to start as a rookie at right tackle?
Oh, my God.
And they were still not solidified up front. And now they're solid with their starters and backups. You know, that they're good to go.
All right, we will get into headlines in the next segment, as well as John McClain was on a long conference call yesterday picking some finalists for the Hall of Fame, including one name that I know makes a lot of folks very, very happy. We'll get into that. Headlines, Astros, Rockets, we'll do it all with the General John McClain as we take you to the top of the hour. You are listening to Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. Top of the hour, Texans Training Camp Live. They'll have Anthony Weaver, the defensive coordinator, on right out of the chute today. They had Deshaun Watson yesterday. They've had some nice guests right at 8 o'clock, so be sure to just keep it right here on Sports Radio 610. Throughout the day, we've got you covered for Texans training camp. Boy, John, you covered Anthony Weaver as a player. You've covered him as a position coach. You know, Weaver is normally soft-spoken is probably not the right word because he is, I think he does carry a presence with him, but he's very calm. He's very stoic. He was not quite as calm and stoic out of practice the last couple of days. The defense has played well the last couple of days. Anthony Weaver is a guy who it probably feels very different for these defensive players, maybe in terms of just management style or social style than Romeo Crennel for these guys. Weaver is a guy who gets after these guys.
Romeo Crennel is kind of like the grandfather. You know, he's around all the time. He doesn't raise his voice unless he feels it's necessary. And he's one of the all-time best defensive coordinators. And he's there. He watches from back behind the secondary, and he's there if Anthony Weaver or any other coach needs to ask him advice. And it's not just on defense. He's been a head coach at two teams, and now he's at Bill O'Brien's associate head coach, which means he's available for anybody. And so Weaver, though, you know, Anthony is a very personable guy. He's funny. He's got a good sense of humor. When he talks, he's pretty informative. He knows how to talk a lot, not say much. And that's an art form for a coach if he can do that. And you think, oh, yeah, this guy's real good. I'm getting good information. You go back and look and like, well, he didn't tell me a whole lot that I didn't know, and he's not supposed to. I can't wait to see the Texans when they get against the Chiefs to see Anthony making the calls and Tim Kelly, but Anthony's got it tougher. He doesn't have as much talent as Tim Kelly has, led by Deshaun Watson, but Anthony can get on those guys. We've watched him as a defensive line coach. He's still coaching the defensive line and making the calls. I like the fact Bill O'Brien yells out the situation, and Anthony and Tim Kelly on opposite sides of the field, they make the calls best based on the situation. I know they would rather have games and joint practices, but they can't, so they have to make the best out of it. And O'Brien, as he's talked to us about and did again yesterday after practice, you know, he's able to spend more time on defense and special teams now that he's not calling plays.
Yeah, I found that interesting, and I was glad to hear that, because a couple days ago, Sean was talking about how the defensive backs were jawing back and forth with O'Brien, and I wasn't going to make a huge deal out of it, but there was a part of me that thought, well, boy, it sounds like the defensive backs still look at Bill O'Brien as the offensive coach if they're talking smack to O'Brien. Whereas, you know, yesterday O'Brien talked about it, and some of the reports from camp were that, yeah, he's spending a lot more time with the defense. Do you get, just from the feel of watching where he is during practice, do you feel like he is taking on more of that actual just head coach and overseer of the entire team than perhaps he did in the past?
He's always been more of a coach who spends time with the other units than, say, Gary Kubiak. Gary spent all his time with the offense, Wade Phillips, whoever the defensive coordinator was. That was their baby, and Gary would keep up on it, but O'Brien has always moved around. I've never paid attention to it in the past because he was the play caller, and it wasn't an issue. Now everybody wants to make a big deal out of it to see what Bill O'Brien is doing differently, and that's the two main things he's talked about now. He's not the one calling the plays. He's calling the situations, and then he's moving around the field with DBs and special teams. He's had Keon Cross in the corner is the one that comes back at him the most, because Crossen does that with everybody. And I think O'Brien likes it. And if Crossen didn't think he could take it, he certainly wouldn't be doing it.
You know, one thing that he's doing that I really like, John, is when he talked about how he's having the coordinators, Anthony Weaver and Tim Kelly, call plays in situations versus perhaps following a script. Because that used to drive me insane when I was on a team that had a bad offensive line. The offensive line would be going through practice, and they already knew which blitzes were coming because it was all scripted out. Then they get into the game, and lo and behold, they can't figure out how to pick up a blitz because they've had everything spoon-fed to them the whole time. It feels like O'Brien, like, but whether it's the walkthroughs, you know, with their virtual walkthrough meeting or the way he's handling the coordinators, it feels like he really wants to simulate the actual game as much as possible.
I think he has to do that because of the circumstances in which we find every team's in at training camp without preseason games and joint practices. And I try to keep up with other teams to see what some of them are doing because they're all in the same boat. And I guess everybody's doing things just about the same. There are things you have to do now that maybe you didn't do in the past because you did have a lot of time to evaluate players. And they've been very fortunate. Texans fans should be knocking on wood right now, because Duke Ejiofor, the outside linebacker who missed last year with a torn Achilles, now blew out his ACL in practice last week. He's the only major injury. We know they're coming, and they better hope that when they have that scrimmage or two that they don't suffer any serious injuries.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. John, who's a guy in training camp through these first four practices that maybe was – either coming in with sort of a questionable resume or Q rating, we'll call it, or coming off of a season that was maybe disappointing, that's made the biggest jump up in terms of the impression that they've made?
I'll give you a starter and a backup, both at the same position. You know, safety, you got one really good player, safety, Justin Reed. The second and third safeties, Tashawn Gibson Sr. and Jahlil Adai, were not brought back. So you have Eric Murray coming in at $7 million a year to be a starter, and people are wondering, well, why did they do that? Because he's never been a consistent starter in the NFL. And they play him up, they play him back, they play him in nickel, they play him several things on special teams. I wrote about him today, and they have, yesterday, and they have a lot of confidence in him. And he is, you know, he thinks once they develop, he said, that camaraderie and communication with Justin Reed, they can be real good. You know, Reed's been in the league 3 years. That's the third safety he's playing with after Tyrann Mathieu and Tashawn Gibson Sr. So now he's got Eric Murray, and if Eric Murray can't cut it, they'll have a fourth one in the fourth consecutive season. And depth at safety is an issue, and that's why A.J. Moore making so many big plays may mean that he's in the Jahlil Adai role as the third safety. But right now, their depth at safety is definitely an issue. So watching Murray be a new player, come in starting, and they don't have a lot of new players that come in starting, but he's one of them. And the fact that Ian Reed of the last line of defense, he's somebody we should all keep an eye on.
John, if I were to just look at David Johnson and make a prediction, just based on how he looks right now, I would say he's going to rush for 1,000, catch 1,000 yards receiving. Also, save a burning hospital full of children from a meteorite crashing to Earth. Maybe use his actual body to act as a bridge for a locomotive over a river. He looks incredible. I just can't bring myself to believe in him because I've seen the last 3 years. Give me a reason to believe in David Johnson more than just his physique.
Well, you said you've seen the last 3 years. In 2018, he had 1,391 yards rushing, receiving, and 10 touchdowns. I don't think that was too shabby playing behind a terrible offensive line. And I made this point with Landry and John Lopez on In the Loop. They were talking about his average per carry with the Cardinals, how bad it was. And I said, what was Carlos Hyde's average per carry the last year before he came here? 3.3 yards. Then he jumped up to 4.4 because he had a better offensive line and a great quarterback. And I thought all along, if David Johnson is healthy, he will do more than Carlos Hyde, and he'll have more yards than Hyde did. But last year,
let me stop you right there.
John,
I'm sorry, John, but I can't. Listen, this is my standard. I don't want him to be just better than Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde started off real well last year, but it's not like he had a great year as a running back. This is the guy you traded for DeAndre Hopkins. I need more than – give me a reason he's going to be way better than Carlos Hyde.
No, I can't do that because he's going to split time with Duke Johnson, and I think that they'll rotate just like they did last year when I think Carlos played 49% of the plays and Duke played almost all the others, and then they worked in Taiwan Jones a little bit. But Johnson's got a big chip on his shoulder. He's got a lot to prove about the way things ended last season with the Cardinals, not just being traded, but the way he lost his starting job and missed three games because of injuries and parts of two others. So, number one, he's got to stay healthy, and if he does, I think if he was the main guy and they didn't have Duke Johnson and they loved Duke, then his stats would end up being better. But I think I'd be surprised if he doesn't rush for 1,100 or 1,200 yards. Of course, he'll be a whole lot better receiver than Hyde was.
Yeah, it's the yards per carry. The total yards will be what he can't be a 3.5 yard per carry guy. Whatever amount of work he gets, get back into those mid fours. That's what
I think. And I think it's a good point, John, about just playing with Deshaun Watson and what it did for Carlos Hyde. That's what I was looking for. That was something that I haven't maybe perhaps been giving enough weight to.
All right, there you go.
Well, he's not going to have a career year like Hyde had the best year of his career because Johnson's 2016 season was off the charts with 20 touchdowns and over 2,000 yards. But he's going to be in position to bounce back big time from where he was last season if he stays healthy.
All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
John, I moved this up to the number one headline because we have not gotten to it yet, but big news yesterday, I heard you call into the guys on In the Loop because I know that John Lopez has been somebody very vocal about the candidacy of Tom Flores, the former Raiders head coach, a two-time Super Bowl winning head coach, his candidacy for the Hall of Fame. If you are someone who has wanted Tom Flores in the Hall of Fame, the Zoom call that you were on for the entire day yesterday yielded some pretty good news. Can you share with us what happened with your Pro Football Hall of Fame committee Zoom call yesterday?
Sure. Ordinarily, I'd be spending 2 days in Canton with the seniors committee this year because of the coronavirus. We did it on Zoom, and it worked so well. I'm guessing I won't be back at the Hall of Fame in August because it saved a lot of money to do it like we did yesterday. There were five of us. We had two Hall of Famers, Gil Brandt and Dick LeBeau, there for advice. We had 12 finalists on seniors. We had a new coaches category. I'm on part of that, too. We had six finalists on that. Tom Flores got the coach. And Tom Flores is a historic guy. He's the first Hispanic quarterback, first Hispanic head coach, first Hispanic head coach to win a Super Bowl. He won two. His playoff record was 8-3. First Hispanic general manager and team president. and he was long overdue. And then Drew Pearson, the Cowboys receiver, there was some tough competition, and it was hard. But I was glad to see Drew Pearson do it because I know he was devastated when he was not part of the Centennial class. And as he told Hall of Fame President David Baker when he called him, "Thank you. I've been waiting so long for these words. Thank you for making my day and making my life." Now, what this means is they are the senior and coach nominee for the Hall of Fame. They'll be voted on the day before the Super Bowl. But our big committee, it's just a formality. These two guys will be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Have you guys ever had a senior nominee not make it in the actual vote?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think so. And the contributor category was created 5 years ago. And I thought coaches should be in with the contributors, but they said no. And the reason they created a separate coach category, it's hard for a coach to get in competing against so many players. And so the only contributor who hasn't made it was Paul Tagliabue. And then he got in on the Centennial class. So I'm fired up about Flores and Pearson. And next week, the contributors committee meets. And I believe that Bill Nunn, who spent his entire life, he went from being a sports writer to spending 40 years with the Steelers, that I'm guessing that Bill Nunn will be the contributor's nominee, and he'll be in Hall of Fame as well.
Is there any chance that I could eventually one day make it in as a contributor based on funny tweets as my contribution?
You know, if you want to be nominated for the Hall of Fame, I'd put you on the list, and the original list will come out, and Sean will interview you and say, "Seth, man, they finally figured out your credentials. How does it feel to be nominated for the Hall of Fame?"
Yeah.
That's what happens. Seriously, I can put anybody on the list, and then we start pairing the list when we vote on that to get it down to the finalists. But
as a contributor, I don't want to be fodder for talk radio shows around the country. It's like, how's this clown Seth Payne make it onto this list?
Oh, I don't know. That'd be pretty good for the show.
Put it on. No. It'd be even better if it was put it on as a contributor, because then people will really be like, wait, what did Seth do? I might actually get some cachet for that. They're like, wow, Seth must be working behind the scenes or something.
That's funny. All right, next headline. The Astros win their sixth in a row yesterday. Zach Greinke was spectacular. Did not get the win in the game. Didn't get the decision. But if the Astros go on to make the postseason, make some noise, this little win streak right here where the offense really has not gotten out of first or second gear, but they're still winning games with a lot of, I think, arms that at the beginning of the year a lot of people didn't know. There's no Justin Verlander at the front end or Roberto Osuna at the back end, and yet they're still winning these games. Six straight wins. They've only given up 7 runs. They came back in extra innings to tie the game and then won the game later in extra innings. Really good stuff from the Astros. John, how impressed have you been with this pitching staff over the last week?
It's been unbelievable. Not just Greinke, McCullers coming off his best performance, and those young pitchers have just been tearing it up. The hitters are awful. Yesterday they had 5 hitters hitting into ones. You know, Altuve, I would throw him nothing but breaking balls in the dirt because he's chasing everything.
I know.
And it's amazing. And then one of their worst hitters wins the game against a 5 infield defense in which he still got the ball through on the left side. And I think people, they're 13-10. They won, what, is it 6 in a row and 7 of 8?
Yeah.
And 6 in a row and 7 of 8. That people are going to start talking about them again, and I don't know if they'll scare anybody, but it was pretty impressive because before the Rockies came to town, I was thinking, man, it's too bad they can't play the Mariners every game.
I'll give the Astros organization credit, and I don't know how much credit James Click should get for this specific part of it, other than in evaluating his roster. I kept hearing that James Click thought that their pipeline was better than all the rating services were saying it was. And I think when it comes to the pitching, it's hard to argue that it hasn't been. I mean, the bullpen has recovered from a pretty serious skid there for a little bit. And now they're 4th in the league in ERA. And it's and a large part of that, obviously, is due to the youth of the performances of their young pitchers.
Yeah.
And think about this, no Verlander, no Cole, no Osuna, and they're pitching like this. And I think, is there a better pitching coach
no.
in Major League Baseball than Brent Strom.
No, I don't know that there's a better coach, period, than Brent Strom. The guy's amazing at what he does. And Brent Strom, we trust, man. So the Astros have won six in a row. The downside, Yordan Alvarez, if you haven't heard, to the IL with some of this knee soreness. Retroactive to August 16th. So that can be an indicator sometimes that it's not the, you know, the death blow that we hope that it's not. So Yordan to the IL. George Springer missed yesterday's game as well, getting an MRI on his wrist. Dusty thought about pinch hitting him later in the game. He did not, so we will wait and see what happens with Springer. The Rockets, next headline, they win last night. Game one of the first round of the playoffs against OKC in the books, in a game that the Rockets didn't really have to sweat very much from about the early second quarter on. It was a double-digit lead the whole way. They led by 8 after 1. They led by 16 at the half, and they just brought that ship into shore. James Harden, 37 points. Jeff Green, 22 points off the bench, a plus-minus rating of plus 28 for Green. James Harden said, guys stepped up with no Russell Westbrook in the
league. We're not sure when Russell's going to be back, you know, so it's an opportunity for guys to step up and play big minutes and contribute to, you know, big-time games. You know, obviously, Eric and Jeff played really well tonight. PJ played well on both ends. I mean, guy, it was just a total team effort. We're going to need that consistently from, you know, each individual.
Just three balls galore last night. John, I'm curious, as someone who's watched a lot of NBA basketball through the years, do you enjoy this style of Rockets basketball, this small ball with all these threes?
It took a while to get used to it, but that's been D'Antoni's MO since he got here. It is fun to watch. It's still scary to think of their lack of size, but Jeff Green was a tremendous addition. Getting Eric Gordon back is huge, and it just doesn't sound like they're confident in Westbrook coming back anytime soon, the way they talk about him. And I know I read everything in our Rockets preview, and Jonathan Fagan, our longtime basketball writer, had the Rockets in 7. And so I thought, man, can they win this first game? Because you look, Lakers got beat, Milwaukee got beat, and they blew them out and hardly broke a sweat. But boy, when they're on as shooters, they are fun to watch.
Well, this is almost hard to believe, but I read it in ESPN, so it must be true. This is, and I did not fact check this, but this is Russell Westbrook's first soft tissue injury. He's had, or I shouldn't say soft, muscle. It's his first muscle injury. Like, all of his other injuries have been kind of injuries you would expect that you get from Russell Westbrook's style of play, like car crash type things. Yeah. You know, dislocated fingers, bruised orbital bones in your face, sprained wrists. So I think maybe part of it is that Russell Westbrook himself doesn't really have a timeline in his head for how he comes back from a muscle injury, because this is the first time he's dealing with it.
Well, that's a great point. And I'm sure if, because you have those soft tissues, you know, Seth, because you played, you better not come back too soon or you're going to make it worse. It's almost like you have to wait a little bit longer to be absolutely certain. But, man, if they keep playing like this, they might win in 4.
All right, those are a few headlines. So Astros win, Rockets win. It was a good day yesterday. In what was a 2-10 start for the Astros and a 5-30 start for the Rockets, just all day winning Houston sports yesterday. John, no practice today. Texans back on the field on Thursday for practice. As we roll forward here, what are the storylines that you see unfolding with this team as we head towards the start of the season?
I think they continue to move toward that. I think they're going to have a scrimmage. I just don't know when. I don't think Bill O'Brien has changed his mind about that. I'll be eager to see the scrimmage and how they handle it, because that'll be as close as they can come to game-type conditions before they get to Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, do we know, is that scrimmage going to be full-on hitting? None of this, like, hey, don't go to the ground, don't go to the ground. That's going to be a simulated game, right?
I don't know. You know, a scrimmage is a simulated game. You know, they, when they got on pads, they say don't go to the ground. Some guys can't help but go to the ground. But to me, if you're scrimmage, you're hitting.
Yeah.
That's why I mentioned earlier about injuries. You got to always worry about that, especially with so many guys still working to get in good, top-notch football condition. But it's the next step up, and it's something I think every team will do.
John, what's going on in the Chronicle through the rest of the week?
Well, now that you guys gave me my idea for tomorrow about their stability on both sides of the ball and special teams, which they've not had under Bill O'Brien, I'm going to write about that. Aaron Wilson and I'll have stories. We're doing podcasts today. It'll all be on TexasSportsNation.com. Thank you guys very much, and stay safe.
You too, John. I'll see you out of practice tomorrow, and John will join us next week in the 7 o'clock hour as well, as Seth and I go with this altered schedule for the portion of Texans training camp. Another week of that. A reminder, Anthony Weaver going to jump in with the guys on Texans Training Camp Live at the top of the hour. Seth, did John really convince you about David Johnson, or were you just saying John convinced you about
David Johnson? Well, it was a good point he had, except that the problem was when John brought up that 2018 was a good year for David Johnson. The biggest thing about 2018, 2019 was yards after contact. Was he breaking tackles? In 2018, David Johnson was 33rd out of 38 running backs in yards after contact. The thing that kind of freaks me out is that Alfred Blue was 35th, which makes me feel like this is Bill O'Brien's type of guy. Give me a huge dude that doesn't actually play like a big guy and doesn't break tackles. That was just show me 2016 David Johnson where he was just bullying his way through people. That's what I need to see.
Yeah, for sure. It's we'll see. Hopefully the chip on the shoulder does the trick for David Johnson. All right, Seth, that's it. You and I are out of time. We will be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Until then, my friend, antibodies and T cells to you.
Antibodies, T cells, and freshly washed face masks to you.
There you go. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, that's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. Anthony Weaver jumping in with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at the top of the hour for Texans Training Camp Live. I'll be on with the guys on In the Loop at 11. I'll be on the afternoon show at 5:15, checking in with training camp reports throughout the day here as we take you through training camp on Sports Radio 610. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.